This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. September was supposed to be a month of renewal and reform for Texas Child Protective Services and its state agency, the Department of Family and Protective Services. The recent legislative session had worked out some fixes for problems with CPS. The solutions were passed and signed into law, and they kicked in on September the 1st. But Hurricane Harvey had other ideas. The massive storm hit the Gulf Coast and swamped Houston. There were neighborhoods underwater, strangers saving strangers, mass evacuations. And now we have the cleanup. We look at the devastation and look to pick up the pieces, including looking at the needs of the children in the state's foster care system. Did you evacuate during Hurricane Harvey? What did you experience? What concerns do you have of the children in our foster care system during the rebuild? Give us a call. This is a community conversation. The number is 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org. And you can tweet us at TPR Source. We're joined this afternoon by State Senator Carlos Uresti, State Senator for District 19 here in San Antonio, and the founder of a Blue Ribbon Task Force looking at this issue. Deanna Ochoa Johnson is with us. She's the Chief Clinical Officer for the Children's Shelter in San Antonio. And Kurt Sinski is the Chief Executive Officer for Upbring, a state multi-state social service agency that has been active in the post-Harvey relief efforts for foster families. Welcome to The Source, all of you. It's great to have you here.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Thank you, Dave.
Senator Uresti, it's never a good time to have a hurricane, but was this one especially a bad time?
Yeah, it was, David, and thanks for having me on your show. It's a terrible time, and whether it was in Houston or anywhere else in the country. No one was anticipating it to be at this level and to be so detrimental to the community. So you add that as a backdrop to what we're dealing with already with our children that find themselves in foster care system, and it's just a really difficult situation for those children.
But we had this change up in the way that we were going to deal with the foster care system, that the new agency, was going to, we decoupling from one set of bureaucracy and creating a new one right when the hurricane hit. And so did that make it more difficult?
It's going to be challenging. And what's going to happen now is of September the 1st, DFPS will report directly to the governor's office instead of under the Health and Human Services Agency. And I will tell you, they've been preparing for that transition, and people were excited about it, and the legislature was prepared, was getting prepared for that. So it's going to be very challenging. There are a number of children in the Harris County area that are in the foster care system, and what people aren't talking about is the caseworkers themselves that have been displaced, that are trying to find a home for them and for their own children, not to mention daycare so they can drop off their kids and go do their job. The hurdles are going to be, I don't want to say overwhelming, but they're going to be very, very challenging.
So, Kurt Sinski, what is the state? What is the situation right now? The state of the foster care system.
So, our agency is one of the larger provider of foster care services throughout the state of Texas, and we are very supportive of the legislature's enactment, Senate Bill 11, where there is a push and a focus of moving toward community-based foster care, and we think that is the right way to go to serve and to protect children. And, from our perspective, Hurricane Harvey, obviously a horrible disaster. We're continuing to respond, and part of our mission is disaster relief as well as caring for foster care children. But, our first focus is ensuring that all of the families who are foster families in, whether it's Corpus Christi or Houston or Victoria, are safe. And so we've been working, for example, closely with the Department of Family and Protective Services, and they've been good about providing us with temporary verification for those of our families who, for example, had to move from their homes flooding or damage. And so working very closely with the department, we've been able to care for all of our families, all of the children, and they may not be in their current home right now, but they are all safe and care continues. It's, I think, a testament to our staff as well as the staff of DFPS and everybody in the community just working together. As, you know, for example, one of our families had to be rescued from the second floor of their home because of the water. And immediately we found some temporary shelter and lodging so that they could continue with what is their mission, and that is to care for their foster children.
Do we know, we have like 70, about 70 fatalities that were attributed to Hurricane Harvey. Did any of those fatalities, were they any of your caseworkers or anyone in the foster care system, State Senator?
They haven't been able to confirm that. We do know that there's a number of children that have been displaced as a result of the hurricane. And my understanding is there were 70 people dead. We cannot confirm whether or not those were, you know, foster kids, but we do know that about 1,600 kids in foster care have been impacted and displaced.
And so, talk about what that means, that they've been impacted and displaced. So, if you're a typical child in the foster care system in Harris County, you were in a home, that home got flooded. And now maybe that home may have to be a total tear down or a rebuild. What does that mean for you, Senator?
Yeah, and that's a great question, and one what we're working with the department on here in San Antonio in order to try to offer some relief to those kids in Houston. But imagine a kid that has already been moved from their home for whatever reason. Their medical appointments have been canceled for the last couple of weeks. So if they were needing any kind of medical treatment, that's probably been put on hold for a couple of weeks, and not to mention their counseling services. Their schools have been closed. Any friends or remaining contacts they had with family members have been scattered. And again, as I said earlier, their CASA, their caseworkers have most likely been displaced. So you put yourself in that 5-6-year-old little boy or girl's shoes, you can only imagine how traumatic it must be. So we're going to, one, obviously try to identify these children, and then two, make up for the services that they've been missing, and now they're dealing with another traumatic event. So it's challenging. I will say and echo some of the things that the doctor mentioned. The department has done an excellent job trying to get in front of this. We partnered up with the Children's Shelter and a bunch of advocate groups about a week and a half ago to send a message to Houston that we're here, we're going to raise money, we're going to try to do our best to try to help these children, whether they be in Houston or if they come over to San Antonio. But it's going to be very complicated. It's going to be a delicate issue that we all have to deal with, pitch in, and try to help these kids. But again, it's overwhelming for those children.
If you go to the website for the foster care system, there is a way that people can donate items. They're looking for unopened school supplies, diapers, baby formula, blankets. Are you seeing a response there, Senator?
We have, and we partnered up with the Bexar County Child Welfare Board as well, and they set up a site called helpharveykids.org, and people can donate there. I think we've raised approximately $6,000 or so, and we're hoping, obviously, to raise a whole lot more. So if people want to help out, they can either contact my office, contact the Children's Shelter, or helpharveykids.org. It's a small amount, but, again, we're hoping to grow that amount and to be able to help as many children as we can. That's just from a volunteer basis, through donations, but there's other ways to help as well.
We'll talk about that when we come back from the break. We'll talk about how this has been disruptive for caseworkers and foster families. The source continues after this break, 210-614-8980. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. The Texas child welfare system was already in stress before Hurricane Harvey, but now perhaps hundreds of foster families in Houston and along the Gulf Coast have been displaced by the storm, and hundreds of child welfare workers have been unable to return to work. We're talking about putting the pieces together for the Child Protective Services System after Hurricane Harvey. This is a state effort looking looking to help the children, help the workers, and get back to the new normal. If you got a question or a comment, give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Do you have friends or family who've been displaced by Harvey? Are you a foster parent or part of a foster family? Would you be willing to become one to try to help the children from Harvey? Give us a call, 210-614-8980. Now, the San Antonio Children's Shelter is doing its part as well. We're joined by Deanna Ochoa Johnson. She is the officer there, the chief clinical officer for the Children's Shelter. And welcome. It's great to have you here.
Thank you. It's very nice to be here.
So how has the Children's Shelter here in San Antonio played? What role are you playing?
Well, as Senator Uresti mentioned, about a week and a half ago, all of the child-serving agencies in San Antonio were called to come together and apprised of the situation and asked to be essentially on the ready to receive children and families from the Houston area, the Corpus Christi area, or any of the other areas that have been impacted by Hurricane Harvey. So we have done so. We have identified space on our facility where we might be able to bring children in as well as families. We have an incredible donor base for the Children's Shelter. San Antonio community is a very generous community, so that we know that when we receive these children and these families, we will be ready to provide for them whatever it is that they need to sustain them until a determination is made when and if they'll be able to go back to their homes.
All these residential facilities like the Children's Shelter are required to have emergency plans, right?
That's right. That's correct.
So did you go through your emergency plan? We didn't know what Harvey was going to do.
No, we didn't. No, it was a huge surprise. So yes, it was essentially identifying, you know, what would we do? You know, where can we make more room in our facility? Our facility tends to stay relatively full, but there's always...
Like what if you had to evacuate? I mean, we didn't know what Harvey was going to do. We could have gotten all those inches of rain right here in Bexar County.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, the families in our foster care program, as well as the other child placing agencies, are required to have a backup plan. So every family has to identify where they would go in the event of an emergency. And the backup to the backup is our facility. So if families don't have a relative that they can go to or a shelter that they can go to, we would certainly bring them in to our facility, take care of them, provide for them until they're able to return or figure out where they're going to go from here.
Now, there were 24 facilities in Harris County that had to evacuate. And so these are multi-children places. And where do those children go? Do they come here in San Antonio?
They possibly could. And so we've been asked to be on the ready to receive some of those children. And that's what we're doing. As mentioned before, at this point, I think it's a waiting game. We're waiting to see, you know, when those caseworkers are able to actually make contact, find out where those children are, where those families are. And what's going to be the short-term and the long-term plan for them.
Okay, and Kurt Sinski, what's going to happen to those kids at those evacuated facilities? And I understand two of them are damaged so badly that they cannot be reopened.
Yeah, so we had an emergency shelter in Corpus Christi that we evacuated to another camp in LaGrange, and they are currently back in Corpus Christi. So it was a successful evacuation, and then they were brought back. We have a residential treatment center right outside of San Antonio in Canyon Lake called New Life Children's Center. And we are accepting some of the children that have been having to be repositioned from some of the impacted residential treatment centers in the Houston area. We also have a treatment center in Katy, Texas, which fortunately that we did not have to evacuate and did not suffer damage miraculously. And so we're accepting children there as well. And, you know, I really give credit to Senator Uresti and the Blue Ribbon Task Force. And, you know, early on, the San Antonio community came together and said, how can we help and how can we accept children? And the Children's Shelter of San Antonio was very involved as well. And it's just an example of how a community comes together and maybe how a community is really the right focus for community-based foster care. Because in some ways, in times of crisis like this, we all do come together. And two, we know what's best for the children from a community perspective. So I think it's a good early test of what happens in terms of a disaster. And so far, I think the state of Texas is passing with flying colors.
Now, community-based care for these children—that's the standard. However, I'm wondering, in Harris County, when so many homes have been damaged, and that's going to hurt the capacity to provide to find foster homes, are those kids going to be relocated out of Harris County? Maybe they'll come to Bexar County, Senator Ureste?
Well, and that's a possibility. And as the doctor said, we're you know, getting ready in the event that that happens. And speaking with Commissioner Whitman of DFPS, that is a possibility. They may go to Travis County. And again, it also depends on how quickly Harris County is able to get back up on their feet. And so that poses more challenges for these children, because then they're even further away from any connection they had to their school, to their, you know, friends, to the family that they're still in touch with. So it's a possibility, and one that I think San Antonio, Bexar County is prepared for.
So are there still many children living in gyms and churches, and are they out of the cot situation and into a warm bed situation, Senator Ureste?
My understanding, the children from Harris County have been accounted for, but what that means is that the department has reached out to them and identified that those children have been accounted for. But many of them are either living in other residential treatment facilities, they're living in hotels, some have been placed with other family members. So the last group in particular, I would submit to you, probably are the ones that need the most help. Kids are in the kinship program, where they're not getting necessarily all of the same services as they would if they had foster parents, are the ones that I think are going to need the most help. So they're kind of everywhere right now, David. Hopefully soon, again, they'll be back into their permanent homes. But I heard this morning on your station, there are thousands and thousands of homes that are going to be bought out by FEMA because they're just not habitable anymore. So it's going to be another difficult challenge. So they may come to San Antonio, may go to Austin, but again, we're going to welcome them with open arms.
And Kurt Sinski, what's the status of these kids? Where are they generally?
You know, so for the most part, organizations like ours and Arrow's another one in the Houston area, Arrow Ministries, we've been able to work with our families and be able to keep them with their families. Now, in some situations, they've had to temporarily relocate, and so they're not in their original house. The primary concern, as the senator mentioned, is a couple of the residential treatment centers are no longer operational, and so a number of those children had to be moved. I think in the long term, what we're worried about is a couple of things. In a community after a natural disaster, the research shows that there is elevated child abuse incidences. The maltreatment seems to increase as families get increasingly frustrated with their current situation because of the disaster. As the senator also mentioned, CPS workers experience many of the same stresses, right? Because they've gone through this disaster as well as all of the foster families. And so they are experiencing some of that same stress that each of us who've been impacted have been experiencing as well. So it's at this point, I think, a question of capacity and ensuring that we continue to recruit. So, example, Upbring at upbring.org, we're always looking for good foster families because we need to keep that pipeline full, because sadly, as a result of this disaster, there are probably going to be more children that are abused, and so the need for good families is going to become even greater.
Now, so
David, can I add to what the doctor said real quickly?
Yes, Senator.
Because he makes an excellent point. You have a lot of grandmothers, for example, that were taking care of, their grandchildren, two or three grandkids, and if they've been displaced and they're elderly and they're on a fixed income, imagine the tremendous stress that now is on that grandmother who's not necessarily receiving, again, the same services as others. So therein, I think, lies in another problem, and what happens to those kids. And, unfortunately, child abuse doesn't stop just because there's a hurricane. I wish that were the case, or just because it's raining. Otherwise, I think we'd pray for rain more often. But unfortunately, it doesn't, and I think it's just going to exacerbate the problem.
So, Deanna Ochoa-Johnson, let's talk about the mental health of these children. And they've already been mm-hmm. through multiple traumas.
Absolutely, yes.
And here, dealing with this, what's happening?
Well, this is just one more trauma in their lives. These are children that have already been through a lot, and so it's going to impact them. And I think it's, and I'd like to make the point, it's very important that we begin to address their mental health needs and start addressing the trauma with them as soon as possible. One of the first things that happens when a new trauma occurs is that the child's whole sense of feeling safe is gone. It's just right out the window. And these are children for whom safety has been kind of a tenuous thing in their lives. They haven't had it much. And so here we are again. And so this is going to rock their little world, if you will, for a while. It's important, I think, to promote a sense of safety. And even though they may be safe, even though they may be in a safe environment for the moment in the sense that their physical needs are being taken care of, that doesn't mean that they feel safe. Felt safety is a whole different concept. And that needs to come with appropriate therapy for them, as well as some support for the parents so that they can support their children through this. When you see the looks on the faces of those folks in Houston, and these were the adults, they look shell-shocked. So imagine how that's going to impact a child when their caregiver looks like they're terrified and the world is coming apart. How is that going to make them feel? I think talking to the children about what's happened, explaining to them that, you know, this was a hurricane, this was a terrible storm, but it has now passed and now it's time to rebuild and that their lives will come back to some sense of normalcy, hopefully sooner than later, is very, very important for these children to hear.
But it's also important for the children to understand or to feel or have the experience that they were not treated less than any other child during this storm. Is that right?
Absolutely, yes. And for foster children, you know, they sometimes feel like they are different, that they haven't, you know, had all the benefits that a normal child has, and that somehow they're less than. And we really have to dispel that for them. We have to let them know that they're just as important, and that, you know, all these adults around them are there to support them, to care for them, to make sure that they are okay, and that their lives go back to normal as soon as possible.
So, Senator Yudese, is that another reason why it's important that we get caseworkers back on their cases?
Absolutely. And, you know, talking to the commissioner about a week ago, again, the concern is these daycare centers in Houston, a lot of them were devastated, may not reopen again, and they were relying on being able to drop their kids off mm-hmm. at those daycares, and they're having to find new places to take their children. So we're going to be looking at, and hopefully it can be through rulemaking. The commissioner has the authority to make some of these changes on his own to address licensing these daycare centers, because that's an issue as well. To the point earlier the doctor made about foster parents, you know, are there things we can do to try to streamline it, make it more efficient so foster parents can step up and take possession of these children and provide for these children? So those are things that we're looking at immediately to try to resolve. So when it does surge, and it's coming soon, we think, to San Antonio or, you know, again, Austin, we're well prepared for that.
Also on the...
And I do want to add, there's about 35,000 kids, I think, that are not in school in Harris County. And that's going to create, that has a potential to create other problems as well.
All right, we'll talk more about that. We'll talk about how the Department of Family and Protective Services is reaching out to their caseworkers and also to daycare centers, trying to see what their status is, making sure that these kids are being treated well, and trying to come up with a new system after the devastation of Hurricane Harvey. Our phone lines are open if you want to call in with a question or a comment. We want to hear from you. Did you or your friends or family, were you all displaced by Harvey? Are you a foster parent, part of a foster family? Are you willing to maybe try to take on more, as we see that Houston has been stressed by Harvey so much, and we're losing a lot of their foster care capacity? The Source continues after this. Stay tuned. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. More than 1,200 foster care children were evacuated from 24 residential centers in the hardest hit areas by Hurricane Harvey. Right now, they're in backup shelters and churches, but the Texas Department of Family and Protective Services says they are figuring out what to do next if those centers are destroyed, and many of them have been, and they're trying to get them, find new places for them. We're talking about that this afternoon. what to do, how do we shore up this important service that we have for our most vulnerable victims here in Texas, the children, and the number to call in if you got a question or a comment, 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Senator Carlos Uresti, when did you recognize that this was going to be as big of a problem as it turned out to be?
Well, it was just something that our Blue Ribbon Task Force in our meeting had talked about and discussed. And typically, as you know, unfortunately, in instances, well, of course, we've never experienced anything this severe, but we're typically being reactive, and we wanted to be proactive in this instance. And we were spared the hurricane here in San Antonio, so we felt that we needed to step up and do whatever we could to reach out to Harris County and DFPS in Houston in order to try to provide some relief for these children and these families. So it was just something that our Blue Ribbon Task Force decided to get involved with.
Kurt Sinski, the Chief Executive Officer for Upbring, a multi-state social service agency, and you've been active in the post-Harvey relief. Was the disaster, as we saw it approaching, was it as bad as you thought or worse than you thought? Did the plans that we had in place, did they work?
You know, so our organization, and I was there at the time, had the privilege of responding to Hurricane Katrina. And in comparing the two, and this is probably the largest disaster since Katrina, obviously, what has impressed me is all of the lessons that I think we as a state and we as a national government have learned by observing what happened in Katrina. Because my sense is that both FEMA at the national level and the state of Texas at the state level, locally at the county and city level, were very well prepared this time. And it was an unimaginable damage disaster. Obviously, a lot of first responders and individual citizens came to respond as well. But overall, the organizational effort and how people were working together in the collaboration was much better than what we experienced during our Katrina experience.
So what goes into that planning? Do y'all have backup sites already pre-selected? Are you confirming to make sure that you have emergency contact numbers for the foster system, or how does that work?
Yes. Yeah, so at the facility level, at our emergency shelters, residential treatment centers, we have backup plans. And we know where we're going to evacuate them. We have plans B and C, depending where the hurricane strikes. We also have contacts set up with each of our family, foster care families, and each of our employees that care for our foster families. And so we're able to track them and also to understand what needs they have so that when, for example, their house gets flooded, we can help them relocate quickly. One example is we knew that a foster family needed to be evacuated because water was coming into their house pretty quickly. And so we were able to work with the local authorities to get them out safely. And so a lot of it is pre-planning, and then also it is following up and ensuring, and sometimes this is 24/7 work, right, where we're not only caring for the foster families and the children and our employees, but we also have Head Start programs, for example, in El Campo and Wharton and Palacios and Bay City. And we were worried about our families that participate in those programs as well. And so how do we care for the clients that have been impacted? Because oftentimes, you know, these are the forgotten, these are the lost. And we've already built up some of that trust relationship with these families and with the communities. And so we're there to provide that lifeline of support so that abuse doesn't occur in those situations because of the extreme stress.
Now, many of these families have been relocated. They're going to be in hotel rooms for months until the houses can be repaired or can find new housing. That's a stressful situation. If you're going to have caseworkers going there to monitor the children's development, I mean, how much, you know, are they going to be held to the same standard? Or how does that work, Senator Uresti?
Well, it is going to be a problem. It is going to be a challenge. And again, you've got a number of people that are out of work and not able to pay their bills. And so that's just another, you know, additional stressor on folks that were doing fine before Hurricane Harvey hit. So one of the things that I've talked to the commissioner about and he's considering is how do we compensate these caseworkers? Are we going to need to bring in additional caseworkers? And I think the obvious question is yes. Where are you going to house them? And they're going to have to be displaced from their homes, and whether it be San Antonio or Austin or where they come in from. We're going to have to send in a SWAT team like we've done in the past before to try to assist these caseworkers to accomplish what they need to do, which is primarily go out and see these kids and touch these kids and make sure they're doing okay. So these are challenges. And one thing that I did mention to the commissioner, and it may be a possibility, we have to go back to Austin for a brief special session to address the issues that we've talked about, whether it be licensing of these daycare facilities, helping foster care parents become parents more efficiently and effectively and quicker, and all the other different issues that we're talking about. And, of course, the funding that's going to have to follow in order to be sure we have plenty of caseworkers on the ground to look after these kids and take care of these kids.
Have you had any communication, Senator Yedeste, with the governor, Governor Abbott, about the need for a special session?
My office has, through his office. I've communicated it to the commissioner and some of my colleagues in Harris County as well, that it's a possibility. We did a phone conference with the delegation a couple of weeks ago and mentioned it to them that might be a possibility. And I think if it's necessary to accomplish those goals, then we should do it. Now, again, if the commissioner can do it or the governor can do it without legislative approval, then that's just as fine as well. But the sooner the better.
Or with there's a budget board with the governor, the speaker, and the lieutenant governor, they're able to make a lot of adjustments.
Right. The legislative budget board has that authority with the speaker and lieutenant governor, and there's four members from the Senate and four members from the House that can probably do a lot of that. It's just a question of the some of the other issues, if it's going to require legislative action. Hopefully it doesn't. I'd prefer them just to be able to do this through rulemaking authority, keep an eye on these children.
One of the reforms that went into place with the CPS during the September 1st would be allowing more leeway with care providers. Is that going to come in very handy now? I know it wasn't put in place for a hurricane, right, but now that does exist.
Exactly. We're trying to, I know you alluded to this earlier, David, get rid of as much bureaucracy as possible. But it's difficult when you have so many children in the system not to have a bureaucracy. But we're trying to limit that and streamline that to the extent that we can and give the commissioner the ability to do more things on his own. And again, the reason we have him reporting directly to the governor, to get rid of as much of that bureaucracy. So, we weren't thinking about this, obviously, but hopefully it's going to come out to work out better for these children.
And Kurt Sinski, you want to add to that? How is that helping you?
We're excited about the opportunity to play a larger role in providing what we call wraparound services. So all of the services that a community can provide to a child under coordination with a private foster care organizations such as the Children's Shelter of San Antonio or Upbring, so that in working in partnership with DFPS, we can actually provide the whole solution to a child to ensure whether or not they are adopted or placed for permanent adoption or provided kinship care or brought back to their family with maybe some additional training. But what is exciting to me is for the first time in maybe my 23 years, I really felt some optimism and hope after this last legislative session, because I think Senator Resty and the rest of Senate and the House really did a good job of enhancing the foster care system here in the state of Texas to allow what the Children's Shelter and Upbring does best, which is truly care for these children.
How did the CPS coordinate with the Red Cross and FEMA during the most chaotic part of the storm? Was it helpful to coordinate with them to keep track of who was where, Senator Yedeste?
Absolutely, and I think they did a great job. But again, I do need to commend the department. I think the department just did a wonderful job in reaching out to these children, notwithstanding all of the challenges that we all saw on TV. And again, to be able to account for all of those children is remarkable, because that's a difficult challenge for anybody, any agency. But I think that there's still a lot of work left to be done. obviously. We've got to get those kids back into a permanent home. With, you know, it may be a hotel room for now, but nonetheless in a permanent home, but reestablish their treatment with their doctors or with their psychologist or their therapist and get them back into school, back into a routine, you know, back into communication with their family and their friends. You know, again, just put yourself in their shoes. You're a six-year-old little boy or girl that's been taken away from your home for who knows what, you know, reason. So you're scared already. And now all of this is happening around you, and you think the world is caving in on you. And that's where we come in. That's where our Blue Ribbon Task Force comes in. That's where Upbring comes in. That's where Children's Shelter comes in. Your station, and David, I got to say this, y'all have always done a wonderful job of highlighting this issue, and I think it's really important in helping to get the message out there to the community that wants to help these children. So it's up to us now as a community to step up, to get involved, and there's so many different ways, whether they volunteer, they make a contribution, they foster. There's just so many different ways, and they need to get involved. The sooner, the better.
More on that when we come back from this break. The number to call in if you got a question or a comment, 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The Source continues after this break. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. What happens to foster children displaced by Hurricane Harvey? We're talking about that this afternoon. We invite you to call in. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. During the hurricane, that doesn't stop child abuse, as you said earlier, Senator Uresti. And so we know that there were still priority one calls that were coming into Child Protective Services. Can you talk about that? What is a priority one call, and what does that require?
Well, priority one call, it deals with, you know, our most vulnerable children. It's typically children that are 3 years and younger, where you have a call that comes in that requires immediate attention, and that means within 24 hours, the caseworker needs to go out and try to locate that child. We had, as you remember, a lot of concerns last session and during the interim, wherein the department was failing to meet the goal that we had given them of trying to at least identify 90% of these children within that time period. And they were having challenges getting that done for many different reasons. I'm happy to report that at least as the last time I checked, they had done a really good job, an exceptional job, in being able to identify these children within that time period. It's a challenge because these families are mobile and they're moving around. It's hard to locate, or they're avoiding contact with the agency. But you couple that now with what's going on, you can imagine how difficult that's going to be. Again, I've got to tell you, I'm really proud of our agency. I think the caseworkers are doing a tremendous job. And someone said earlier, I think the doctor did, during the last legislative session, you know, we thank them. We could do more, but we gave them a $12,000 a year pay raise in order to show them that we do appreciate them, that we need to keep them, we need to retain them. We've lowered our retention rates considerably because you can imagine if the rates were still as high as they have been in the past, we'd have even more problems. So we're getting there. We still got a lot of work to do, as I said earlier, but I think we can get it done. I think we have a legislature that showed this last session. I know we have a legislature that showed this last session. Children were our priority. But having said that, you know, we can't now drop the ball. We've got to continue to improve on all the wonderful things we've done over the last couple of years.
All right, let's go to the phone lines. Foster has called in. Foster, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. I was wondering, is any consideration for medically fragile, handicapped children who, you know, are in wheelchairs and power wheelchairs that, you know, that equipment's gotten flooded and they need that equipment, you know, very quickly. And sometimes the NCO or the, you know, the HMO system does it. The bureaucracy can be pretty challenging.
Foster, thank you for the call. Good question. Senator Uresti?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, we've seen a lot of our seniors in the news that were in wheelchairs and et cetera, and it's a great question to bring up, and I appreciate him bringing that up, and it's one that I'll be sure to bring to the attention of the commissioner to be sure that we're doing everything we can to help these children, because I've seen these medically fragile children come to Austin with their parents, and, you know, we pray for them because they're in a very difficult situation, so you can only imagine what that family must be going through in the event that their wheelchair is not working properly or got destroyed because of water, et cetera. So I'll be sure that that's on the top of the list of the items that I'm going to discuss with the commissioner after this interview.
And the Department of Family and Protective Services has set up a way. We're working with churches and other faith-based organizations who want to provide those types of donations and services. And they have set up an email called faithpartners@dfps.state.tx.us. They're reaching out in multiple ways, trying to find people who are generous in spirit, who want to help everyone who's been devastated by Hurricane Harvey. And you wanted to add to this, Kurt Sinski?
Yes. Our organization cares for a lot of medically fragile children in our foster care program, and there was some damage that occurred within our families. And so what Upring is doing is we're raising funds through upring.org, and we are replacing any of those equipments where it has been lost, because it's necessary, it's the right thing to do, and what we have found is a lot of people have been very generous with their donations, and we're continuing to raise money because the needs continue to come in.
So, Senator Uresti, and I know you were talking about the foster care system and the CPS and the children, but also I know another issue that you're concerned about is elder abuse. And right. So there are some people who say that, you know, we see a lot of people who are in their homes who have been neglected during these evacuations, and we're finding out that these people should be getting some attention on a day-to-day basis, and we need to figure out how that's going to happen.
Absolutely, and the way we do that, one way we do that, David, is the community gets involved. You know, my father is 84 years old, and he still gets around, but he has 8 children to go and check on him. There are a lot of families that are elderly that simply don't. They may have 1 or 2 children but live outside the state or outside the city, or for whatever reason, you know, they're not able to communicate. So that's, I think, we can't rely on government to do everything. And two, the community can get involved. That's where I think everyone can step up and get involved. And if people want more information, they can go to blueribbontaskforce.com, and we can provide them with information. We don't raise money through the blueribbontaskforce.com. What we do is we promote the different groups like Upring and Children's Shelter and Help Harvey Kids as well. So you're absolutely right, David. I mean, we see it on TV. You don't see the children in those situations, but we know both of those groups need as much help as they can get.
Deanna Ochoa-Johnson at the Children's Shelter in San Antonio, what lessons have we learned here? We know the storms are going to continue to come, and they're going to get worse, apparently, from climate change. We have to plan. And this is, we know, was the planning appropriate? Did it work? Were the things that we wish you'd thought of that next time we know?
I think every disaster is going to give us the opportunity to think about what we did well, what we could have done better. I agree that I think that this disaster was handled so much better and so much quicker than Katrina was. So obviously, through FEMA and Red Cross and, you know, and governmental agencies, there was more preparation. That's evident. But going forward, I think that we've done a great job of addressing the immediate needs of these children and families as far as getting them to safety, making sure their basic needs are met as far as food, shelter, clothing, etc. However, the next step is how do we help them get their lives back to normalcy? I've seen a call out for nurses to volunteer to go out to these areas and provide nursing care for some of these folks. I think the next step is to, you know, have that same call out for teachers and therapists, recreational folks, so that they can maybe go out to the shelters and these hotel rooms where these families maybe are being lodged temporarily and start to create some sort of normalcy again for these families. I think substitute teachers could go in there and maybe start doing some lesson plans with these children, start giving them some sort of sense of, continuing their education so that they're just not out there in limbo for weeks and weeks and weeks. Being in a shelter, I think in and of itself has to be a very stressful situation. So whatever we can do to provide some structure around that time for these children and these families, I think would be very helpful to them.
Senator Uresti, back to what we talked about earlier with the possible special session. Now, do you see this as a really quick special session, gavel in and gavel out within 48 hours or so, take care of business and not get mired in some of these other issues?
Right. Exactly, and I've seen where the governor has already said it's not necessary to have a special session, and again, I hope we don't have to, but in the event we do, absolutely. We need to get in there, knock out the business necessary to take care of these children, you know, none of that other funny business, you know, none of those other issues that we don't even want to bring up right now, but exactly. This should just be about the kids, and only the governor can place an item on the call, as you know, David. But still, other members can file bills, so it should be about these children. Let's get in. Let's fix this problem. I think we've done a great job, but there's still more work that needs to be done.
Kurt Sinski, what do you think? What lessons did you learn from this experience?
You know, and I think maybe one of the good reminders for everyone, David, is that just because it's no longer on CNN doesn't mean that this journey's over. Our experience from other disasters and now this one is that this is going to be probably a two-year journey. And so there are things that we do in the short term, and there are things that we're going to do in the intermediate term. And then there are ways to respond and to care for these children in the long term, because as Diana and others know very well, trauma can have lasting consequences. And so whatever we can do for the next 2 years in terms of caring for the children that were impacted by Hurricane Harvey, I think that's in all of our interests for the long-term success of the state of Texas.
So disasters are going to happen. The planning has to be done in advance in order to make sure that the impacts are minimized. And so, Senator Uresti, what lessons did you learn here?
Well, I think one is we were proactive, and I think that helped a lot, at least San Antonio. I don't think anybody expected, of course, the tragedy that happened in Harris County. But two, to be quick to respond and to react. And the last thing I'll say, David, is the community now is their chance to step up and get involved. There's so many different ways. And the reminder will be just imagine if it's your six-year-old grandson or granddaughter that is in that situation, you know, what you would do. I know what I would do, you know, the mountains I would move to help my three-year-old granddaughter or my other grandkids. That's how I think they need to approach it. And so get involved, pretend it's your kid, your grandkid that needs help. All those children want to do is they just want to be happy and they want to be safe. And that's where we come in to help them.
And you think that San Antonio, Bexar County, Central Texas, that we're going to need more foster parents now than ever to try to pick up the capacity?
Exactly. I really do, David. And I think if we get ahead of the curve, we can meet that demand before it gets here.
All right. I want to thank all of our guests. That's the Senator Carlos Uresti, a state senator from District 19 here in San Antonio, founder of the Blue Ribbon Task Force, Diana Ochoa-Johnson, chief clinical officer for the Children's Shelter in San Antonio, Kurt Sinski, he is the chief executive officer for Upbring, a multi-state social service agency. They've been active in post-Harvey relief. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thank you so much for tuning us.